Ladies and gentlemen, a very good evening and a warm welcome to the Red and Blue Review. We are fast and rapidly approaching the end of the season. Two more games to go. We've got lots to discuss this evening. The most memorable evening that I can remember at Selhurst Park, probably since Chris Stamboul, if I'm honest with you. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as we do. Oh, the whole panel that's on this evening, they were all at the game last night. They're raring to talk to you all about what they saw, what they witnessed. I know the most strange thing I just said there, there's the whole panel was actually at the game last night, including some bloke that I had to send the postcode to the SE25 to. Good evening, Jill. I hope you're well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Good, yeah. Thank you. Hope everyone's well.
And, of course, back by, because it wouldn't be the same about in these days, Ian Noble. I hope you're well, mate. How are you?
Very good evening, Nick. Very good evening, everyone. Yeah, it's good to be back. Really good to be back on the show. Looking forward to it.
And I'll just say, I was saying pre-show, everybody, that I hadn't seen him for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then he pointed out that he was actually on last week because I wasn't. Fergus Tidd, are you well, buddy?
Hi, Nick. Hi, everybody. Yeah, very well. Thank you. Yeah.
Good stuff. I can see you out there, James. Good evening, mate. And our own Mr. Stato. Paul Gear, a.k.a. The Real Panel. How are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Thanks, Nick. I've got a bit of a croaky voice celebrating all these goals we've been scoring recently.
I was going to say, I wonder.
I'm not quite used to this, but it's a consequence I'm well worth putting up with.
And it's not long now, mate, until you can go and spend some more money. What am I alluding to?
New kit. There's rumours that they'll be playing in it in the last game of the season, like they did last year. So hopefully next time there'll be a new one on the wall.
Excellent. I can hear an echo, gentlemen. Somebody got a device on loud? If you have, please mute it because I can hear Paul repeating himself. Bless his heart. Right, so ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about obviously what happened at Selhurst Park last night. It was something that. Like I say, we haven't witnessed for a long time. I think the football that we've seen over the last 5 or 6 weeks is something that we haven't seen for a long time. We're going to start there, boys, if you don't mind. I'm coming to each of you. Just a minute synopsis, if you'd be so kind, as to what you've been witnessing over the last few weeks. Jill, because I've been on with you recently, start with you first. What have you seen? What's really impressed you? Where are we at? And what are we looking forward to going forward?
Oh, blimey, where to start? I mean, it's been the maddest 5 games over 3 weeks that I can remember for a long time. I mean, 13 goals in 5 games against teams really that most rose-tinted spectacle Palace fans would have thought we wouldn't have got results against. We wouldn't have. We always near enough draw with West Ham. We don't beat Newcastle. We always draw with Fulham. We always get beat. Well, I'm saying we always get beat by Man United, but we actually don't these days. But yeah, I mean, not a lot of people thought that we would have 4 wins and a draw out of there. I mean, that's stupendous. Why do I think? I don't know. Maybe the players have been given a certain amount of freedom. And we've gradually getting players back. I haven't seen enough of the training videos, or I've seen a few, but it seems to be Smiles back. And when you've got Smiles, you've got, a bit of team bonding. I know we went away to Spain, I think it was, and it all seems to be, everyone seems to be buying into Glasner's way of thinking. And again, 3-4-3, 3-5-2, whatever way you want to look at it, I'm loving that formation. Always wanted it. Now I've got it.
You're muted, Nick.
Thank you, Ian, to you. Same question. Joe alluded to the smile on the face, and nothing says that more than at least say going to hug the manager. So what have we got? What's going on?
I think if I had to use one word to describe it, I'd say transformation. That's how it feels. We go into these games now expecting to win. It wasn't too long ago where, Manchester United visit SE25 and you really expect to lose. You probably don't even expect to score a goal. But, yesterday pre-match in the pub, it was just full of optimism, notwithstanding the fact that we didn't actually beat Fulham, but we were much better than them on the day. And, you know, and then the three wins before that. And then you just go into a game like last night, expecting to win. I don't think any of us really expected it to be as good as it was. But nevertheless, there's that expectation there. And every single player has improved under Glasner. I can't think of a player that's regressed or is not as good as he was before. And that includes some of the more senior players that we'd sort of written off, you know, Klein and Hughes. You know, we none of us were raving about these guys, and yet, you know, they've improved their game tremendously. And then you add the new blood of Wharton and Munoz into that as well, and the way they've gelled and the way they're performing is second to none. And there's nobody that says a bad word about them. It's just brilliant. It's just a really good time to be a Crystal Palace supporter.
Thank you, mate. Paul, I'm going to come to you. It's just a breath of fresh air, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, from a personal point of view, as Ian will testify, we go to every game, home and away. And some of the rubbish we've had to put up with in the last couple of years, it's all made worthwhile by runs like this. Because it's a joy to go and watch them at the moment, because you know they're going to get a performance with passion. You're going to get a performance with confidence. And you're going to get a performance, which is something I've always said on this show, with a mindset to attack and to try and win games. Roy Hodgson's plan was always, we're going to nullify the opposition. That's first priority. Oliver Glasner, his first press conference, he came in and said, I want to score goals. This team wants to win. Even at 4-0, we were still trying to score goals last night. And it's great to watch. There's a freedom about the team. Under Roy, I never like going back and bashing him. He did a job, whatever. But every player was told, do this, do this, do this. Now, like in any walk of life, if you tell a person they can go out and express themselves, that's what they will do. And that's what we have. We have a team, people like Elise, Eze, with license to go and play football rather than stay there and mark someone. So it's great. And the results are bearing out.
Boys, you're already on fire. Okay, Paul, you don't know what you've just covered. Okay, because I was going to come to Ferg. Lee Lockwood in the questions crew, Ferg. Said to us earlier on, he said, can we please, and Paul just alluded to it, can we please acknowledge that after 95 minutes played, we were 4-0 up, okay, and we were on the tack going for the fifth. Players going forward, looking to score again, simply wouldn't have happened earlier in the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was actually going to allude to that. I mean, I know Ian used the word transformation, but there's a couple of words I'd throw in there, confidence. It's just, you know, the whole team just seems so much more confident. And team spirit, you know, the substitutes, when they're walking off the pitch, they're clapping, the fans are clapping them. You know, we used to be moaning about some of the substitutions that were coming on, head in hands and stuff like that. It's just completely changed. The 95 minutes plus, you know, I think the changing formation allows us to keep the ball a little bit longer than we used to, possession-wise. So the players aren't getting as tired. We've not got that, it's the last 10 minutes, just drop back 10 yards mentality. That's completely gone. You know, Glasner wants to win the game, and he wants to every kick of the ball. He wants us to attack. Like you said, you score goals, you win games. And that seems to be his mythology. And it's just fantastic. I mean, last night, you know, like you said, 4-0, and we're still pushing forward. On another day, it could have been 8 or 9. It could have been really embarrassing for United.
I think you're right. I make you right because, you know, Joe and I were saying this could be end up 6 or 7 here. And I make you right. Joe, you wanted to make a point?
Yeah, Ian said, you know, in our wildest dreams, we didn't really think we might be able to do what happened last night. But honestly, I promise you, I've got a mate across the road. He's a massive gooner, season ticket holder, everything. And I was talking to him a couple of days ago, and I just, and you know, and he was, well, I said, I'm, you know, I've not been able to get him many games this season. I said, but I think we'll absolutely smash him. And nothing, you know, it was even more confirmed to me when I saw Casemiro and Johnny Evans. I mean, crikey. I mean, what you know, he's not blessed with massive pace, but what Mateta did to Johnny Evans yesterday was ridiculous. And you know, Elise and Eze, at almost every opportunity, tried to turn Casemiro and break his ankles. I mean, the feint that Elise did before his goal and put him on his backside. I mean, you know, he's, I mean, It didn't. I promise you, Nick, I said it to you before the game, and I said it in that fella's ear to wind him up. I genuinely thought that we would absolutely smash him. So it wasn't a surprise for me. And the worst thing is, after the run that we've been on, not getting the kudos of we weren't supposed to beat Liverpool. We beat Liverpool. We weren't, you know, like I say, West Ham are a bit of a bogey side, but we weren't supposed to beat Newcastle. You know, and now we've beaten Man United, and the world's gone upside down because we beat Man United. But to be honest with you, you know, they are where they are because we are where we are. You know, they've had injuries, but I still, I'm sure we're going to cover it, but we're not getting enough kudos for what we're doing. We're playing really good football, and we've got some really decent ballers apart from Eze and Elise.
You mean other than, not as opposed to a part of it. Right, listen, we're going to move it on, boys, okay? But before I do, in the chat, there's loads of you in the chat. I can see you all, James and John and Tim, Richard. Bob says, I think this is the best side, Palace side I've ever seen. I've been watching in since the Burt Head day. So good evening to you, Bob. Thank you for joining us. But we're going to start off the top of the show before Ian goes into the game with two little negatives. And the first negative, okay, is me. Okay, I said pre-game, and Richard was there, Simon was there. Joe, I think I might have said it to you as well. The Palace were going to win 4 tonight, and I didn't put a bet on. Dickhead number one. I said Palace are going to win 4 tonight and didn't put a bet on. Yes, I accept it. I'm a prat. Okay, that's number one. The other one, Nigel, over to you. Okay, the one thing that pissed me off during the day, during the game yesterday, there's only one thing. Man United fans are the biggest bunch of whiners. When anybody sticks their arms out in the shape of an aeroplane in their direction, rightly so, they're having opposition fans going about Busby Babes and the Munich air disaster and everything that goes alongside that. And rightly so, yeah? After that event at Selhurst Park with Cantona, they're still singing the Cantona song. A bunch of arseholes. Sorry, but I was angry. I could hear it. Ian, over your side of the ground, could you hear it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I said, you know, to people I was with, is that the best they've got, really? You know, and they love doing it to us, but, you know, if you were there that night, which I was, the Cantona game, it was a horrible thing to have happened to anyone. Yeah, the boy was winding him up. Of course he was, but, you know, he should have been above that. It's ancient history now. But what happened later that season, you know, will live long in the memory of everyone associated with Crystal Palace Football Club. You know, rest in peace, Paul Nixon. You know, and yet they've got no respect at all for the life of that lad. And it hurts, you know. I nearly got into a fight with a Man United fan on the bus coming out of Old Trafford a few years ago. I think we'd drawn 0-0, and I got on one of their buses to take us back to the station. And this fan, I had Palace colours on. This bloke was going, "Ooh, Cantona." I gave him a right mouthful, and I was on my own and with one or two others, and I nearly got in a bit of bother. But honestly, it really winds me up as well.
Monty, I know you're watching tonight, mate. Good evening. I know you're out there, and I know you were heavily involved on that fateful day we lost Paul. Rest in peace, Paul Nixon. Anyway, we're going to move. We'll gloss over that. I just pissed up. What a Man United fans do it. You know, it's like anybody singing about High Soul. Just move on, you bunch of idiots. Right, we're going to go to the lineup, Nigel, if you'd be so kind, before I hand over to Ian and get myself a drink. So the lineup was Henderson in goal, Munoz, Klein, Anderson, Richards, Mitchell, Walton, Hughes, Elise, Mateta, and Eze. Now, once Ian's done his chat, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do is we're actually going to focus a little bit on all of them, okay? Not just on Eze and Elise, it's too easy. Not on Mateta's goals. May I add, history-making Mateta goal. I hope some one of you got that covered. Paul Gio, coming to you for that later on. Okay, yeah. History-making Mateta. But we're going to be talking about the ones that don't normally get the limelight as well, because I want to cover all of them off, if you'd be so kind, during the course of the show. Because Palace put out on Twitter today, "Your man of the match, please." Well, I don't know. I've no idea. I ain't got a clue. I wouldn't know. Yeah, of course he's going to go to Elise, because he scored the two goals, because it's the flavour of the month. But is it? Ladies and gentlemen, over to you in the chat. Who was your man of the match? While Ian's talking, give me your man of the matches and I'll read a few of them out in a few minutes. Ian, over to you, mate.
It probably wasn't Henderson, even though he kept a clean sheet. But, you know, it's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah, so just the one change from the lineup at Fulham, where Eze is fit again to start alongside Elise Mateta up top. And, of course, one other noticeable addition to the team sheet or the squad on the bench was Mark Gahey coming back for the first time since he got injured at Brighton all those weeks ago. So, yeah, really good to see him back on the bench. Interesting one, because I thought he may have started him, but I think someone said, why change a winning team? And I had to point out, we didn't actually beat Fulham, but I get the sentiment of, you know, why change a team that's doing well? Eze comes back in, of course. And, you know, the expectation, as we've already said, was there right from the off, early pressure from Palace. There were so many good talking points that let's just go straight to the first goal. This has got to be the easiest assist anyone's going to get from Daniel Munoz, who throws the ball in as the wing-backs take the throw-ins in his own half of the pitch to a Michael Olise, who picks the ball up in his own half, I think it was in his own half, and he goes past a couple of people, and he just goes past them like they're not really there. Gets to the D, as you can see there, left foot, right in the corner, gives Onana no chance at all. 12 minutes, 1-0. Thank you very much indeed.
Ian, did he scuff it?
I don't think so, particularly. Do you think he scuffed it?
Yeah, I think he scuffed it. Anybody else agree with me?
A little bit, yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
But it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter whether he scuffed it or not. The important thing is he's on target. And what he does, a player like Michael Olise, is that good? When you watch them before a game, they've got the shooting practice, and they do it right in front of us, Paul, don't they? The shooting practice in the main stand. And you see him go in the corner quite a lot from Olise. And they've just got that accuracy. They can put it just in that particular point. And he's aiming for that. He might have scuffed it a bit. Yeah, so I'll give you that one. But, you know, Olise then fed Munoz. Munoz was involved in lots of stuff up that right flank. Plays very advanced, as we've identified. And I thought he actually made the wrong choice here, because I thought he could have pulled the trigger. And instead, he tries to squirt back to Olise, and it doesn't quite work out. Wrong choice for me. And then later on, shortly after that, Munoz, he's crossed the ball, and he's crossed it quite deep, and Mitchell picks it up. So you've got both fullbacks linking in the attacking third in the area. And Elise's shot was saved. It was direct at the keeper. But he was quite annoyed with himself, because at that point, he obviously didn't get it to where he wanted it, intended it to be. Man United threatened very little in that first half even. But Garnacho did win a free kick on the edge of the box. And I said to Dave, who I was with, "God, put it over. And we know what Eriksen can do. You know, we've seen it in his locker when he was at Spurs, especially a few years back. You know, he could hit a free kick really well. But he puts it over the bar, thankfully. And then United get a corner on their left, and it gets to Casemiro, I think it was, on the back post. This looping header is going up, and Henderson, you know, he tries to get to it, but that big lump of a centre forward, Hoyland, he barges him into the goal, and the ball ends up in the back of the net. And at the time, again, this is Man United we're playing. This could be given, you know, shoulders charge. You know, you can see that being given as a goal, but thankfully. Referee Gillett, he rules it out. Rightly so, I thought. What do you think, boys? Do you think it was the right decision to rule that goal out?
I thought it was actually a bit soft. It depends how you look at it. It's all about consistency with the refs these days. If the foul on Raya the other day for Arsenal is the benchmark, then last night was a foul. But if you go back a couple of months, James Trafford for Burnley was almost assaulted when Luton scored against him and they let it go. So it's the classic referee inconsistency about it. It was just a foul, just enough to be a foul. He nudged him when he was off the ground, so he's off balance and it does do it. But if it had been given, it was soft, put it that way, but it's probably just about 51% a foul.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul, I think, as well. If Sam Johnson's in goal, does he do the same there, or does he get more on it?
And that's the thing. Henderson is weak at that point. That's the weakness in his game, crosses and dealing with them. And, yeah, Johnson would have taken Hoyland out and taken the ball out of the box.
I agree with you.
Jill? Yeah, I agree. I've said for ages now, you know, he needs to be a little bit braver and he'll get decisions. The chances are that we really, really should, you know, he should just be a little bit braver, because referees, you know, we're not a new club anymore. The new clubs generally get treated quite unfairly at times by referees. But, yeah, I could have seen it given. But from where we were, it was plainly a foul. You watch him, he jumps, but he jumps into him. And it's not a Klinsmann for our keeper. He actually hits the back of the net. It did get bumped into. So, but had it been given, the goal been given, it wouldn't have surprised me. I thought the referee was shocking in the first half. He was so, so biased. Kick us, nothing. Kick them, free kick.
But we did win that decision, which I think was the right decision. But I agree with you, Paul. I think it was soft.
Took long enough, though, Ian. Took long enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're sitting there talking about it. But I always say, if it takes a long time, it probably means that they're going to rule it out. Paul Grant says, lucky the bloke on VAR was a Palace fan. Yeah, I don't know about that. But yeah, so we're 2-0. Sorry, we're 1-0 still. I think it was 1-0 at the time when that happened. I think I'm right with that. Let's talk about the second goal, because this is on 40 minutes. And this time the assist is also from our own half. So Richards picks the ball up in his own half and he plays a through ball down the left. And Mateta picks it up. He's still a long way from goal, a long, long way from goal. So if you could wind that image back a bit, he's about 30 yards out when he picks the ball up and he's got Johnny Evans in front of him. And he actually goes past him like he's not there at all. He might as well not have been there. And what a strike. Absolutely brilliant, wasn't it? Left foot, I think, right into the roof of the net. Gives Onana absolutely no chance at all. And suddenly we're 2-0 up and happy days. And suddenly you breathe, because how many times have we led 1-0 at home thinking, just if we can only get that second goal, that'll be a relief. And we get it nice and early on. Paul Gear.
Talking of goals, live update time. Crystal Palace's goal of the season has just been announced at the player of the season do, and Eberechi Eze's goal at Anfield has won the goal of the season.
Presumably, okay, that's interesting, isn't it?
The best team goal that we scored.
Plus, I'm going to give you a further update that Paul hasn't seen yet. Just come through. Jesse Derry wins Crystal Palace's under 18 player of the season, and we will keep our eye on these throughout the course of the show, just to prove to everybody out in Facebook and YouTube land, we are absolutely live. And Cereza wanted to say hello to a young supporter that came up to her and said that she was the positive one on the show and recognised her off the show. So good evening to that young supporter. Well done. Ian, back to you, mate.
Excellent. Yeah, keep the live updates coming, because that is a goal in the April goal of the month or match of the day. It wasn't even in the final three, was it? And the Schlupp one missed out, but obviously it was a fix, but yeah, great that he's won that accolade, and good news for sure. So I think, I think someone has said in the chat earlier, I saw it go through, that Eze needs to get his shooting boots on. I think we can just talk about this a little bit, because Eze, for me, he did have a few chances which he didn't hit the target, but also he was showboating a bit last night. Maybe he was just feeling a bit confident. We're 2-0 up. And there's a lovely moment. It was quite in front of us, Paul, wasn't it? When he won the ball and he sort of showboated a bit, and he got his pass away and we kept possession. But I think, oh my goodness, you want to be careful doing that at this level. And I just felt sometimes he held on to the ball a little bit too long. Again, I think he was quite anxious to get on the score sheet himself. And that's the kind of player he is. I don't mind that, especially when we're winning so comfortably, as we were at sort of not, well, too comfortably, but 2-0 up going into the break.
That's what he does when he's confident. He holds the ball, he gives the ball, and yeah. But he's the kind of player who will keep the ball. And yeah, for me, I don't mind that. If it's positive play, it's great. You're going to give the ball away sometimes, but it's worth it for the times it doesn't go and create something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Charlie, is it my notes? I'm not sure where half-time comes. This is a real worry, isn't it? And I did prepare this, but there we go. Anyway, we're 2-0 at half-time.
Get bring the lads in, because both the boys have got their hands up, mate.
Yeah, go on then. Well, I think
so. I mean, you're going to say about Eze. I kept saying to you, Nick, he's making Casemiro look stupid, and Casemiro jumped in on him probably 3-4 times last night. I said to you, I'll be amazed if he doesn't get smashed by one of them. And it took until the end. I can't remember what his name is. Some Joe Average in the midfield or at the back for Man United to smash Alisse in the 75. Yeah, I mean, it just it, it, you know, it was a spiteful tackle, and it, I'm not even sure he got a yellow card for it, but
he
deserved to, but Eze, when he wants the ball, you've got to give it to him.
Just on Eze, Ian, I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but when we went 4-0 up, it almost felt like for the rest of the game, the team were trying to set Eze up for a goal. They had opportunities to shoot, and they weren't. They were knocking it across the box, and people were doing dummies. So Eze could get on the end of it. He was absolutely desperate, and the team were desperate for him to score, I think.
I think you're actually spot on there. Go on, Nick, and then I'll say what I'm going to say next.
Very quick update, ladies and gentlemen, live. Our very own Palace supporting Joe Whitworth wins the under-21 player of the season. Well done, Joe.
Good. Alice will be pleased. Right. So did I say that out loud? Okay. That's good. The player you're referring to, Gel, is Amrabat, United's number 4. And that happened in front of us as well. He got booked for sure. It could have been a red card. I'll be interested to know what people think in the chat and what you guys think. Red or was yellow the correct decision for Amrabat on Elise in the second half?
Red all day long. From where I was in the upper tier, it looked like he had studs up. He went through the back of him. It's right in front of the linesman as well. And he didn't react to the linesman. He was looking at the ref to see what he was going to do. And he got his yellow card out quite quickly, didn't he? I thought it was a red card.
Paul and then Joe.
Intent-wise, it was red. He wanted to take him out, but fortunately for us, he didn't get him quite as badly as he meant to. So I think yellow was probably all right with that. The more frustrating part of that was our manager got a yellow card in the incident as well, because he obviously wasn't happy with it, and rightly so. So yeah, there needs to be a bit more common sense in sort of managers' frustrations, I think, because he certainly shouldn't be booked for complaining about that tackle.
Ian, yep. If you don't mind, I think actually Crystal Palace Football Club are actually tuning in this evening, because they've obviously been listening to what you boys have rightly been talking about. Ebrahima Eze on winning the Goal of the Season award. I thought Michael would win it, he said. We're confident and we're free. That's Eze's words in the last couple of minutes. For me, it's easy to score that goal, but the build-up was important. You guys were saying earlier they've been released, they've been given freedom, and he's just said, we're confident and we're free. Well done, boys. Congratulations. Carry on, Ian.
Brilliant. Okay, Joe, did you want to come in before I talk about the third goal?
Yeah, all right, yeah, I will do. And just on that point, there was a couple of other things, but the thing I said before, I think we quite quickly saw how they keep swapping very quickly. Well, I think they just have a chat with themselves, Elise and Eze, and say we swap now, and they just swap sides. But I mean, my thing about Eze is I truly believe that he should just have a free roll. I think he's that good. You know, I think, you know, you can hark back to players of old that were less speedy but as skillful, and they would generally give them, you know, people like Ben Oddle and Matt Letizia, just give them free rolls to go where they want, because he will come and pick it up from deep, you know. And I said to you last night, Nick, we have to, I don't want him tackling, I don't want him getting injured. When the other team have got a corner, I want him on the halfway line, like a bunch of 9-year-olds. Stand on the halfway line, we can hoof it. We don't have to try and, because they won't have to keep three players back for Eze. But yeah, freedom is everything.
I think one of the things you've got to remember is that I think Eze's a better player when Elise's on the pitch. And I think Elise's a better player when Eze's on the pitch.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is that they've both got the ability to go past players and do something magical. Now, if you've got them both playing, opposition can't double up on both of them. And if they do double up on one, it gives the other one the freedom. And Paul, you spoke about this the other week, you know, the way we set up now with the advanced wing backs, and you've got the three of them, Mateta and Eze and Elise, playing tightly together in the middle of the park up top in the final third. Eze and Elise have got the license then to roam and do that thing, you know, two number 10s really, you know, is what we're talking about. I watched a lot of FPL content, as many people will know, and the least said about my FPL team last week, the better. But I listened to a guy this week who I've got a lot of time for, a bloke called FPL Harry, And he said about Crystal Palace, he said, Eze, Elise and Mateta, he said, not many defences worldwide could live with them at the moment. You know, and you've got people that are in, you know, independent, you know, neutral, saying that about Crystal Palace's front three. It's quite impressive. Paul.
Yeah, how many points did you get in?
67 I got last week.
Yeah, I think I got 114. I got 114, didn't I? Okay. Yeah.
I think you
did. Carry on.
Where are you in the league? Who's top of the league?
Carry on.
That'll be me. Right, okay. So before we get into the third goal, there was a nice, I want to just talk about this move. There was a nice move right to left, and this is where Eze picked the ball up on the edge of the box, and it was Mitchell overlapping on the left, and he gave it to him, and a really nice strike. Anana well saved. And interestingly, Anana was kept, you know, he let in four, but he actually made six saves last night. Six saves of good shots on target. We've talked about some of them. You know, that scored him two extra FPL points, by the way, those six saves. We come to the third goal. It was a corner. We can't count this as scoring from a corner because it was second phase. We put the ball in. It was cleared out to Wharton on the edge of the box. He puts a beautiful ball in. You know, we haven't spoken about Adam Wharton yet, but what a player he is.
He
puts the ball in. And Anderson was calling for it at the far side. You can see he's with his hand in the air. And Anderson there is the player on the left furthest forward, plays it across the box, gets in behind Dallow. And who's in the middle in the six-yard box poaching like a centre-forward? But Tariq Mitchell, number three, scores the third goal. And on 58 minutes, we're 3-0 up within the hour. And everything does look rosy. Game over at this stage, I think. You know,
what is he doing now? What is he doing now? This is Palace.
I was trying to think, when was the last time Palace had a left-back in the six-yard box?
Exactly.
I know Patrick Van Aanholt scored a lot of goals, but they weren't from six-yard boxes. But this is, as we said earlier, this is the freedom and what Glasner wants. We had about seven players in that box. Now, that would never have happened before. And by definition, the more players in there, the more hassle you cause, more problems you cause, more goals you can score. It's not rocket science. And we were moaning left, right and centre, but Hodgson never did this. And it's basics. And as you say, it's beautiful to see. Our fullbacks are almost as attacking as our attackers. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They play like wingers, really, a lot of the time, which is cool. Yeah, really good. Ferg, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say, he'd had a couple of opportunities before that, you know, and go back to the Eze Elise thing. You know, they get the ball and they kind of cross over and they draw the defenders with them. And Munoz and Mitchell have got all that space, you know, down the flanks.
That comparison with Eze and Elise swapping over that Jill mentioned earlier on, who does that remind you of?
Brian Bright.
This is Zaha and Bolasie, isn't it?
Zaha and Bolasie.
Zaha and Bolasie, yeah.
Love it.
So again, they were tied to the wings, though, weren't they? Again, so yeah. We were lucky that year. Well, not lucky. We were great that year because Murray held everything in the middle of the box. So that worked as a three.
And there's your Mateta. That brings Mateta in.
Now Mateta's doing that, but they're playing together, and that it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. This is good stuff. I'm enjoying this, boys. Go on, carry on, Ian.
Everything starts with an M, doesn't it? Our wing-backs are M&M. I quite like that, you know. Just thought that one up. It's really good. Right, so Man United, they did have a few moments in the second half. They had a corner from their right. Give Henderson his due. Smart save at the near post. Then we had Hughesy had a shot from the edge of the box. Again, we haven't really spoken much about him, but I think he really bossed the midfield with Wharton last night. His tackling was excellent. His timing was excellent. He's a rejuvenated player under Oliver Glasner. And he had a shot at the edge of the box that was well saved by Onana. And then it's a he finds Elise just wide. Eze fires just wide. Playing a 1-2 with Elise on the edge of the box. That's right. So Eze
picks it up.
Lovely little moment.
It was.
He just puts it just wide of the far post, doesn't he? And that, you know, talking to Fergus about he wanting to score, you know, he was desperate, wasn't he, to get on the score sheet, but it wasn't to be for him last night. And then we look at the fourth goal. You know, we didn't have long to wait between the third and the fourth goals. Munez picked the pocket on the byline of the United player, and he pulls it back to Elise.
That was great on its own, wasn't it? That's been right in front of you, Ian. That was
It was our side, yeah. And he's just, I love the way he gets forward. I love the way his hunger and desire. And he pulls it back to Elise, they curled it in, and it was just a great goal for number four. And there's Anana there, he's clutching thin air. And you know, 4-0, we're in dreamland at that stage. You know, the subs that we made, I thought were decent. I think Glasner's really got this sorted. You know, we've said before, you know, we've got to use the squad and that kind of stuff. But you look at the squad and the way we've used those subs. We talked earlier about players rejuvenated. Jaro Riedewald needs to be mentioned in there as well. He comes off the bench with Edouard, you know, just standing ovation for Hughes and Mateta for their contribution during the game. And then Gahey gets his chance. Klein goes off on 78 minutes. And then to cap it all, you take our two best players off on 85. Who do we bring on? Schlupp and Ayew, both of whom have contributed tremendously to this football club in recent years and indeed this season. And for the first time, for a long time, I'm thinking, my goodness me, we have strength in depth to really make a difference and use all 16 players and use a squad to our advantage. I think, Ferg, you wanted... Paul, you wanted to come in first, then maybe Joe.
Yeah, I mean, on the fourth goal, I mean, I love what they said today about, I mean, obviously, at least they went straight to the manager. I mean, we'll come on to this probably later as well. It's great to see they're all happy at the club, buying into the manager, and hopefully long-term, that's great for us. But it just shows the intelligence of Michael Olise in heat of the battle. He cuts inside the box, and he remembers something that Oliver Glasner told him in the Fulham dressing room shower the week before. About curling it into the near post rather than going to the far post. And it's just, it shows the whole thought process in the club at the moment is just such clear thinking. And that's what confidence does.
Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, going back to the, I hosted the other day and I said about Riedewald, he just looks reborn under Glasner. But we've gone for 5 years, we've had basically, you know, a 12-man team, and now we're 16. You know, we're using substitutes regularly, and I think what that does as well is that if you put the game to bed, there's no point in keeping Eze or Olise to be the victim of spiteful challenges. If you're, you know, if the other team's getting done as he was a victim of last night, Olise. So the quicker we can get those players off and get the likes of Schlupp, who again seems to be rejuvenated, you know, and it can bring Ayew on for Olise late on. Yeah, I mean, it's just we've got the depth, and this is the other thing as well. We've got more depth than what we actually think. You know, let's just say that nobody gets sold next season, then we have got Sam Johnston, we've got Gaye, we've got Decore, we've got Raksaki. I mean, they literally is. They are on a third. They are good members of, maybe not Raksaki at the moment, unless he pulls his finger out. But I mean, you know, that's another three legit first team players to come back into that squad. We've not had this much depth for a long, long time.
Absolutely, and you miss Lerma off that list, and of course the young Brazilian boy França,
exactly.
Yeah. To deceive a little bit, you know. So yeah, so you know, just to finish the game off, guys, you know, and I think we touched on this earlier. We're 4-0 up, and we're still pushing for the fifth goal. And Edouard, he comes off the bench. You know, he's keen to score as well. He did it the other week. He didn't quite manage it last night, but he had a couple of good goes. You know, he had the ball in the box and he crossed it. Munoz was in the six-yard box, anxious to get on the score sheet. He still hasn't scored for Crystal Palace. That's only a matter of time, trust me. And then Edouard has a lovely effort, hits the post from distance. And we're, you know, we finished the game 4-0 with just lots of smiles on our faces around Selhurst. And, yeah, happy days. And the rain had stopped as well. So, you know, what more could you ask for, really? And all those Manchester United fans, it's quite a long way back to Surrey. We get that, you know. But, you know, here's the stats. You know, they did have more possession. That surprised me a little bit to see that, you know. But look at those shots, 18 to their 7, 9 on target to their 2, 6 corners. You know, Paul mentioned it earlier. You know, if you have more shots, you're going to score more goals. And Oliver Glasner talks about this a lot in his interviews, very articulately. You know, we know English isn't his first language. He speaks ever so well. And, you know, he's a great ambassador for the club already. Long, long, long may it continue. You boys want to talk? I'll shut up now.
Yeah, I just want to say on the possession, it's a bit misleading because I think most of that is them trying to get out of their own half. you know, knocking the ball back across their back four because they just couldn't get out, could they? So they had a lot of the ball, but it wasn't in any dangerous areas. It was all in their own half.
Yeah. Paul?
Yeah, just to go back to Nick's earlier mention about the John Philippe Mateta stat. He scored 5 league goals in his first 37 home league games at Selhurst Park. He's now scored 8 in his last 6. And the goal last night broke the record. He's now scored in 6 consecutive home games in the top flight, which broke Mark Bright's record of scoring in 5. So, yeah, he's doing the business.
Nigel Croucher, I think Paul needs his own jingle where he's going, Stato. A bit of update from the Player of the Year stuff going on. Where is it? Is it Fairfield Orgs?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, so 2 players that get our special Palace community mention for Palace for Life are Chris Richards and Amy Everett from the ladies' team, so well done to them. People in the chat talking about are these guys playing for their contracts? Maybe so, but do you know what? You carry on, lads, and yeah, your point's well made. Somebody else also messaged me and said, if we've got Eminem at the back with his shaved head, have we got a Malteser up top with Mateta? I just thought. So no more updates from Player of the Year, but I will keep you posted. Right, I'm throwing all 4 of you under the bus, okay? You don't know what's coming, okay? I haven't pre-warned you. You are going to speak for 2 minutes individually, gentlemen, on certain players. Okay, here we go. Now, Paul, I'm going to kick off with you first. Adam Walton, go.
Well, Adam Walton, where to start? I think Adam Walton is going to be a shock inclusion in the Euro squad. I think Gareth Southgate was there watching him. He has taken to this league like a duck to water. When he first came in, I didn't know much about him, to be honest. I knew, from my understanding, he was a tough tackling ball winner. He's proved to be so much more than that. I said on the show last week, he's looked head and shoulders above some very experienced Premier League midfielders in the 10, 11 games he's played. And to show that kind of maturity at 20, whatever he is, and in his first few games, he's been brilliant. His eye for a pass is great. I mean, he's got assists. They did a comparison with Kobe Mainoo last night as well, because obviously he's managed to get in the England side. I think he outshone him last night. And I think he's slotted into the team. And I think, as I say, I think there's big things ahead for him. And he's already become one of our most sought-after players. I wouldn't surprise me if clubs wanted to try and take him already. I think he's been top-notch. He's exceeded my expectations. And someone put on a forum I read earlier, it'd be interesting to know if Doogie Friedman expected this at this point or whether he was bought as a long-term. Because really, he's doing now what we would wanted him to do in 2-3 years, probably. He's slotted in, he's brilliant, and I can't speak highly enough of him, and I think he's already as key to this team as probably the other midfielders.
Okay, thank you for that, mate. I've just seen... okay, right. Gel, you're going to get the next one. Okay, you've always been an advocate for 5 across the back, okay? Daniel Munoz. In fact, before you do that, Simon Philpott just said in the chat, Walton and Munoz, they've got to be the best buys in the transfer window last year. And I think I'll make you right. Gel, Daniel Munoz, go.
5 across the middle, you mean? Oh, yeah. I mean, what does he give us? He gives us tough tackling, pace, 90 minutes or 95 minutes of energy. I can't remember the last time that we had a right-sided player, you know, like that, that's not all out attacking. If he's done what he's done just based on just this season, you know, the next few years, seem, you know, we should be very excited about him. People must be looking at him because he seems head and shoulders better than most of the teams that I've seen. You know, obviously most of you guys go to every game. I can't, but I do watch, you know, I try and have a half day on a Saturday, and I do try and watch it. And he just looks better than other people. He just looks so assured. I mean, I don't know what we paid for him, but whatever it was, it's good money. It's really good money. And we should be excited to have him running up and down the line. You know, you know when you've pretty much made it at Palace when you get a song. Some people need to sort out a song for him because he's very, very important to us. Already, he would be a huge miss if he wasn't playing.
You're muted again, Nick.
Sorry, my apologies. Tony Quinn has just said 22 million, Munoz, apparently, in the chat. Paul is disagreeing. Paul, have you got a number?
I think Mark's put just under 9, which is closer to what I think. We spent 30 million in January. I think 9 was on Munoz and 21 was on Walton.
That's great. Thank you.
Right, as I say, I'm pulling these off at random, okay? But I'd like Ian, if you'd be so kind, to talk to me about the transformation. Your word, Chris Richards, please go.
Oh, I thought I might get him. I think he looks like he should be in a Jackson 5. But yeah, apart from that, Dodgy Barnett. I think he's settled in really well, been asked what he's had to do really, really well as part of the back three. Very assured on the ball. Never let us down, doesn't make mistakes easily. I think he finds a simple ball well. You know, the assist for Mateta's goal yesterday sort of epitomised the simple ball forward, thinks forward as well. Yeah, pass back when he needs to pass back to keep possession. But I think he's a really useful addition to the back three. Whether he can keep his place in that first choice 11 when everyone's fit, remains to be seen. But if he does, then good luck to him, because I think he's got the ability to step up to the same level as some of these others we've been talking about. Of course, he's a US international, made the trip over to Europe, and we signed him from the continent. But he's a good player, and I'm pleased that he's at Crystal Palace for sure.
Thank you, mate, and very good stuff as well. Where should we go with Ferg? Ferg, I'd like you to do the transformed Michael Hughes. Michael Hughes.
Hughes.
Yeah.
He played for us in 2004, didn't he?
Yeah. It was great Irish international, wasn't he?
Yeah. 20 years ago.
It's just triggered his contract, isn't he? Yeah, suspension. So we've got him for another year.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, my God. Well, we always... He's a fan favourite anyway. We always knew what he was capable of. But I think playing alongside Walton, Walton's got this like two-touch passes. He does all the pretty stuff. And I think Hughes does all the ugly stuff. I mean, some of the tackles he did last night were just fantastic. He's like a pit bull. And he's just after the ball. Under Glasnow, I think it's like what we alluded to earlier. It's this freedom, this look. We know how good you are. You wouldn't be in the Premier League if you weren't a decent footballer. And I think Glasnow's just said, right, Hughesy, just go out there, play your game. You know, and I don't think there's that freedom for Hughes. His passing's a lot better. I mean, you know, under Roy, and it's not a criticism of Roy, but Hughes, and it might have been tactics, he always used to do his little pirouettes and pass the ball back. And it used to be quite frustrating. Now, you haven't seen him do that once. He either wins the ball, and when he gets the ball, it's forward. Forward passing. It's always attack-minded.
But that's got to come from the manager.
Yeah, it has, yeah. Yeah, it's his freedom. He's just sort of said, look, he's obviously seen something in training, Hughes. He said, look, you know, you're a defensive midfield player, but you've got other capabilities. You're capable of doing more. And he's getting that out of all the players, not just Hughes, but it's a joy to watch. And like we alluded to earlier, you know, when Decore is back and Lerma's back, and if Guy doesn't leave, I mean, I keep talking about him leaving, but I've not seen anything concrete about that. It's just going to be, to pick that first 11, it's just going to be such a challenge. And it'd be a real shame if Hughes isn't part of that. Because I think, you know, based on the last sort of 8, 9, 10 games he's played, he's just been fantastic. I can't remember what game it was. West Ham game, I think. I would have given him man of the match because he was just everywhere. You know,
I mean, if you think about it,
he wasn't getting last night.
Exactly. And if you think about it, in our history, we've always loved midfield terrier. I did pull out Jimmy Mack. And talking about Hughesy, and it's funny that we talk about Hughesy, back to the award ceremony, Crystal Palace women, it's Elise Hughes. World, we're just loving living in it, okay, is what she just said. She has just won the Cinches Women's Player of the Season. Congratulations, Elise Hughes. Fantastic effort. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are absolutely and totally live in your living rooms. So you don't have to go to the Fairfield Halls. We'll bring you all that news as it happens, Jill.
Well, on that theme, we can't let you get away with a player, you know. So let's go straight to the top with a player that's been absolutely rejuvenated in Mateta up front. Nick.
Who, me? You're chucking me under the bus. Right. Okay, I will do Mateta. And if I'm honest with you, and I'll be honest with everybody, anybody that's ever watched this show will know that I've always described him as a giraffe, okay? He's a tall, gangly, useless player, okay? But in this particular formation, I think, again, Oliver Glasner has got something in this player, the way they're actually doing it, or the system that they're playing, I mean, he's got to be up there. Okay, the plaudits will always go to the other two, as we know. But as far as they don't do the most improved player of the season like they're doing kids football, but if they did, it's got to be Jean-Philippe Mateta. He has been transformed. He made me look an idiot, not difficult, as you're all probably quite rightly say. But who would have said 6 months ago that guy there is going to break your club records? Nobody, not one of you sitting there would have said, yeah, that guy there is going to banging six on the trot. It ain't going to happen. It'd be lucky if he played six games over Edouard. Don't forget, Edouard was our number one choice under Roy. Okay, Edouard was the number one choice. And part of me feels that Edouard will probably leave him in the summer because of what's happened with Mateta. We'll bring in one of Glasner's boys, I'm sure, to give Mateta some competition. But I think at the expense of Edouard, if I'm, I may be completely wrong. Anybody want to disagree with something I just said?
No, I think you could well be right. I think Edouard would want to play first team football. You know, he was clearly successful in Scotland. He hasn't quite done it in the Premier League, really. He hasn't been given too many minutes of late. But I think earlier on, he's had plenty of chances to have staked his claim to be Palace's number nine. But I don't not rate him. I think he's all right. I think when he's come on, he's done just as well. And I think he's an improved player under Glasner, like the others.
I just want to jump in there. I'm following a thread that's in the chat, that's going on in the chat. So forgive me for not giving you names and name checks for you guys that are talking about it. But I am reading the chat live, as well as watching what's going on at Fairfield Halls and talking to you all as it's happening. So forgive me for not capturing your name. But somebody just was talking in the chat with reference. I'd love to know what your experts, and I mean experts, is what you would describe as, would what your preferred starting 11 would be. Let me stop whoever said that in your tracks. Ladies and gentlemen, please never forget, the Red and Blue Review are proud. We are not experts. We don't profess to be experts. We are Crystal Palace supporters, first and foremost, okay? Mark Whittaker says, not experts, it's called fans' passion for the club that we love. Everybody is entitled to their opinion. Spot on, Mark. Okay, we are not experts. I've never professed to be an expert. Jill thinks he is, but we know he's full of crap. Okay, thank you for your love. Thank you for your contribution, by the way. All of you.
Where did that come from?
Anyway, Jill, did you have your head up?
Well, I'll tell you what, we discussed something before we come on, and I'm just going to take the initiative anyway. It was Ian said that he was a bit disappointed with the amount of tickets that seem to have been sold by Palace fans to Man United fans. I think it's a little bit naughty, really. So I was watching, I saw a fella behind me and Nick were talking about, you know, blogs and this, that and the other, you know, last night before the game. And it was a fella, he's got a little YouTube channel, his name's Tristian, and Tristian CPFC Vlogs. Really good. Get over there on YouTube and have a little look at it. He's so enthusiastic. I met him last night. Really nice fellow. I was watching his vlog today, and he said he said, look at all the Man United fans leaving on 75 minutes. Because they were the only people that were leaving the ground on 75 minutes last night. I did not left on 82 minutes, but I had a four-year-old mate with me, didn't I, as you well know, who wanted to go and see her mummy, so I didn't have any choice in it. But anyway, I was a bit peeved because it was one in front of us, and you know, it seems to be a lot of people that people never knew who they were. And what are you getting for that ticket? 40 quid? 50 quid? Can you give it to another Palace fan? Offer it up to another Palace fan? It just does seem to be. I've seen it. Trouble over the years. You know, had we got thumped last night and they'd have been jumping up all over the homes now, you can guarantee that on our fair few people would have been really deeply unhappy with that. I don't get it. Maybe 40 quid this day and age is a lot of money to people. I suppose it is, but you know, stick it on a Palace forum if you want to sell your tickets. Give a Palace fan a chance instead of Man United fans. Unless, of course, they're your friends.
Okay, and I absolutely agree with you. If you are a Palace fan selling to an opposition fan, you are a disgrace. My opinion, and I'm entitled to it. Paul Gear looks as though he's about to join the Boy Scouts, okay? He's going dip, 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 dip,
But it's about respect. If they turn up, put their hands under their seats and don't cheer for the opposition, I don't have too much of an issue with it. I've seen enough Palace supporters on our forums who have sat in home ends at other grounds when they can't get tickets. It's as I say, if you go out there and give it large, yes, you're going to be an idiot. You're going to get chucked out. You're going to cause problems. If you go there, just watch your team. Don't cause a problem or make noises. I don't think it's the end of the world, to be honest.
Okay.
Before
you make your point, Nigel, can you prep Bromley, please? I've forgotten Bromley. Go for it, mate.
No, I was just going to say, so a guy that I sit with, season ticket holder, was coming into the ground last night, and there was two people trying to get in with Man United tops on. And the stewards, these were the stewards' words. This is in the Homesdale end. Go away, take those tops off, and come back, and we'll let you in. That's the mentality. So they knew they were United fans. They knew they shouldn't be going into the Homesdale. They asked them to remove their tops and then come back. Crazy.
Absolutely
crazy.
Joe, I'm going to move on, mate.
Over to you.
Yeah, Simon Philpott said he only sells his tickets to fellow Eagles. Indeed you do.
Ian.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to agree with Paul here. I mean, I've sat in the home end in at away grounds. I've done it at Anfield. I've done it at the old Leicester ground, Filbert Street. Because I was with someone that supported those teams and I kept my mouth shut. I didn't wear any colours. And I think you just got to understand how football works. Football is tribal. It's not like rugby or cricket where everyone gets along and pats each other on the back and says, well done. It's all right to have a drink in the pub before and after with the opposition fans. We do that enough. But in the ground, when the whistle is blown and the ball is over that, the white line, the players step over the white line, it's very tribal. And if you're a proper football supporter, that's how I feel anyway. And I get very angry if away fans are giving it large in the home end, and they should have more respect. So, Paul, I'm with you on that 100%. But behave yourself. I suppose what we've got to understand with Man United, and it's the same for Liverpool sometimes, these are big clubs. They have a lot of supporters and a lot of London-based supporters as well. And that's probably their only chance they've ever got seeing Man United all season life. You know, if they manage to blag a ticket from a Palace mate or something. So it happens.
And they all went home pretty upset, which is even better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly. good point, well made. Bromley, it was remiss of me at the top of the show not to congratulate Mr. Woodman. There he is. Bless his heart. And Bromley team, they are a local team. The only sad part of it is Sutton and Bromley have gone in opposite directions, but they are in the Football League for the first time in their history, and I am absolutely delighted. They are, I don't know, 20 minutes from me, about 3 minutes from Jill. Ian, weren't you born in that area?
Yeah, I'm a Bromley boy, mate. Yeah, born and bred in the Bromley area, and used to go down to Hayes Lane on a Saturday afternoon sometimes back in the Isthmian League days. Probably cost about £1.50 to get in or something. All our local Sunday League Cup finals were played on their pitch, that kind of thing. Yeah, used to play over at Norman Park, which is just behind their ground on the pitches there, if anyone knows that. So I was delighted to see Bromley promoted. It's fantastic. 132-year history. And I think what makes it special, you've already put a picture of him, Andy Woodman. You know, Andy Woodman is Palace boy, you know. He was best mates with Gareth Southgate growing up at Palace. Never played for the Palace first team. His main club in Football League football was Northampton Town. I met Andy a few times back in the day. Nice fella. Put on a bit of weight since then, mind you. But fair play to him. And good luck in League Two next season.
Phil?
Yeah, I told you that story a long, long time ago. I think he's a year older or a year younger than me. But when I was asked to play in golf for my school, he was we had shots at each other. My auntie knew his gran, so he used to live down in West Norwood, or that's where we used to have a kick about. But yeah, a friend of mine, Jerry Dulk, used to own Bromley FC. And I know, you know, he played for them and used to own them. And also, you know, there's ties with Mark Goldberg through Bromley FC as well. But yeah, I mean, it's massive. A mate of mine, Gary Ullman, he owns Cray Wanderers, that used to ground share at Bromley. So Bromley have come a huge, huge way in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And it's, yeah, I mean, the new owners have done loads. The ground looks great. Everything is on the up.
I was about to say, Jill, because you and I have been over there to see Dean Davenport.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
he wouldn't recognise the ground now, would he?
No. I mean, it just moved on so much. Absolutely. Yeah, so fantastic. And it's just a shame that, like you say, you know, Bromley have gone up and sat and have dropped out, which is, you know, it's unfortunate. But it is what it is.
Paul? I saw Alan Smith, our former manager, tweeting congratulations to Andy Woodman and Bruce Dyer for Bromley going up. So I don't know if Bruce is doing something there as well. So
Bruce, a bit of a palace link.
Yeah, yeah. Might explain why they've been offside so much.
Alan Smith was there when they were handing out the medals. He stood next to the Bromley chairman.
Yeah, I saw him.
Good for you, boys. And by the way, there's no further update on the awards ceremony. So if anything comes in before we wrap up, I should let you know. Okay.
IU's got player of the season, Nick.
Has he? Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. Ian.
Yeah, so we need to know what Bruce Dyer's doing at Bromley, Paul said. So anyone in the chat knows that. I didn't know Bruce Dyer was at Bromley, but fair play.
Clark Samuel said it was Alex Dyer, not Bruce Dyer.
Okay, I thought it said Bruce Dyer.
Alex Dyer. So, but he was a Palace connection as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, Alex Dyer.
He's a bit older, yeah. But, okay, fair enough. We won't lose any sleep over it, though, will we, guys? You know,
No, of course not. But it's brilliant for local football, and you know, it's just another pathway for youngsters to come through and hopefully be snapped up by the mighty Crystal Palace and Oliver Glasner in 10 years' time. That's what we need. Okay, boys, listen. Do you know what? I enjoyed that. That was fun. And ladies and gentlemen, out of Facebook land, YouTube land, if you enjoyed it as much, please comment in the chat and let us know you enjoyed it. You know, we're not experts. Okay, we are your fellow friends and football fans, and we just like to come and give you a little bit of entertainment once a week. And if you're enjoying it, please tell us it. And Tom Clark Samuel says Bruce is connected to Barnsley, apparently. So the next show will be posted. Oh, we haven't done this actually. We'll do the last two fictions, boys. The next show will be the on Sunday, the 12th of May at 8 o'clock. I believe I'm in the chair for that one as well. And boys, very, very quick prediction for those. There you go. You've got 6 points on offer. Ferg, you go first, mate. How many points out of those six?
I'm going to go six. Did go the last day. I went win-win draw. But I think we'll beat Villa. I don't think they'll have a lot to play for.
And they're still in the European, I think we'll win the next two. Cool. Paul? Yeah.
6 points.
Any stats before you go?
No. No, I think we'll beat Wolves because they're not very. I think we're a better team, and I think we'll beat Villa because I think Villa will have fourth place wrapped up, so they'll be on the beach.
Back to you, Ferg.
One, Nick.
Huh?
Mateta. I think Mateta is the first player since Alan Shearer to score six goals in a row at home for a new manager.
Do you know what? I've got that written down somewhere as well. And you are bang on, sir. You are on the nose, mate. Well done. Gel, sit out of those two games.
4 points. I think we beat Wolves and draw against Villa.
Superb. And Mr. Noblair.
Yeah, 6 for me as well. Can't see us getting anything other than a win at Wolves. I don't think they're particularly good. I assume we're going to get there because I'm going to travel up with Mr. Gear in his car. He's driving us up there on Saturday. We'll have to sort out time to meet at yours, mate. And Villa, I'm missing it. I'm missing the final game of the season. I'll be in Bulgaria. I'm missing it, but I committed to someone. I was going to go to Bulgaria with them for 5 days. So I'm missing the Villa game. But I think we'll beat them. I agree. I think they didn't look very good, did they, when they lost to that on the coast the other day. So I think we'll beat them as well.
So Paul Gear's now going from Cub Scouts to a Kit Kat. He's got 4 fingers in a Kit Kat.
Hopefully 6 points. We'll see us finish above that lot on the south coast as well.
That Villa result didn't do us
that
any
would be sweet. That would be very, very sweet indeed if that happened, especially living where we do for a game.
John, saying great show again, boys. That's compliments to you. Lots of Andy Woodman's daughter clips my dog, says Monty. Good on you, Mick. I love you. On that bomb,
tenuous links.
Tenuous, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, on that bombshell, I'm going to wrap it up right there. Boys, I couldn't do it without you. Thank you, Nigel. Thank you. Everybody out on Facebook and YouTube land, God bless. Up the palace. I love you all. Come on.
Come on, my team.
No, I won.
Up the palace.
He clips my dog. That's got to...